sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's classic police drama with Calling All Cars and the case of the York Gang Holdup. But first, on the lighter side, let's head on over to Summerfield and visit with the Great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve was created by Harold Perry while working on Fibber McGee and Molly in Chicago. The character became so popular that, in August of 1941, Gildersleeve broke away for his own Sunday night NBC show. The program is thought to be the first radio show based on a supporting character from another program. Harold Perry, who created the role of Gildersleeve, grew tired of it by the 10th season and decided to quit. Into Perry's shoes came Willard Waterman, whose interpretation was so much like the original, it was startling. For the 54-55 season, the program was a daily 15-minute offering, with each episode loosely connected. The show returned to 30 minutes in 1955, where it continued on Thursdays until 1958. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Great Gildersleeve and the College Chums and College Chums Sun Visits from November of 1942, another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Great Gildersleeve. Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. Now on to Summerfield and The Great Gildersleeve. There's a snap in the air these days and a touch of football. It's the kind of weather that makes a man want to be up and doing. And sure enough, at 10 o'clock in the morning, we find Gildersleeve arriving at his office ready for big things.
Good morning, Miss Bitch.
Good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
How's business this morning?
Just about as usual. There was a young man in to see you.
Oh, yes? Who was he?
Mr. Brinkerhoff. He had a letter of introduction. Here.
Brinkerhoff? I don't know any Brinkerhoff, do I?
That I couldn't say.
Yes. The only Brinkerhoff I ever knew was a fellow I went to college with. And there was a Brinkerhoff who traveled for some wholesale house, but he was killed in a bus crash. It wouldn't be him.
I doubt it.
Yes. Of course, there's Brinkerhoff and Schultz, but I don't know anybody there, so I don't see who'd be writing to me. I wonder who it could be.
May I make a suggestion?
What's that?
Why don't you open the letter and find out?
Oh, very good. Excellent idea. You're a wonderful woman, Miss Fitch. I don't know how I'd get along without you. Sometimes I'm tempted to try. Oh, it's from Brink.
Brink?
You know Brink? No, I don't suppose you do, but you've heard of him. He was All-American in 1919.
All-American what?
Halfback. He's the one who made the famous play against Navy. Oh, but maybe you don't remember. It was in the last quarter. The about 1 minute to go, and we had the ball on our own 10-yard line. Here, I'll show you. Bend over.
I beg your pardon.
Bend over. I'm Brink, and you're playing center for Navy.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Well, I'm just trying to show you. What's the matter with you? Anyway, that's the fellow. Imagine me getting a letter from him. You see, it's addressed to me personally. Dear Tubby.
Dear Tubby?
I used to be a little stout. Wait till I show this to Hooker. I bet he never got a letter from an All-American. Ooh, he says here, temper sure does fugit. I'd give my right arm to see you again, you old son of a gun. This is me he's writing to. He says, maybe you and me can get together at reunion sometime and have a good old chin fest.
You and me. This man went to college?
It's all American. Scholarship. Then he goes on and he says, well, enough of such bourgeois. This epistle will introduce my son, Larry, who has just graduated from the old alma mater and is now starting on his own out in your neck of the woods. Anything you can do to introduce him around and help him make contacts will certainly be appreciated. Well, I'll have to do that. I'll have to have him right out to the house right away. And look how he signs it.
As ever, Brink.
Good old Brink. What times we had together. By George, I'll have the boy out tonight. I'll have him out to dinner. Get my house on the phone, will you? Yes, sir. Any son of Brink's is a son of mine. Anybody home?
Hiya.
Hello, Leroy.
Got the paper? Can I have the 20s?
Here. Where is everybody?
I don't know. Bertie's out in the kitchen or someplace.
Do you have to read it on the floor, Leroy?
It's easier that way.
Well, don't leave it there. Pick it up when you get through.
I always do.
Yes, you do. Where's your sister?
What?
I asked you a question.
She's in the hands of pirates.
Marjorie, what are you talking about?
Charlie Dimple. She's been trapped by river pirates. Now,
open
a prisoner on an old Japanese junk.
It's an old Jap. Could you tear yourself away from that Japanese junk long enough to tell me where Marjorie is?
I don't know. She went out somewhere. The hairdresser's, I guess. She's got a heavy date.
Date? How do you know?
She's been going around all afternoon with gunk on her face.
Yes. Well, date or no date, she's going to have to postpone it. Marjorie?
Marjorie,
Mr. Gilfrey. What have you been up to, Bertie?
I just got back from marketing.
It's a little late for marketing, isn't it?
It was a little late when you called up about dinner.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry, Bertie. I couldn't get a hold of the man sooner. Did you get the pot roast?
Mr. Gilsleeve, I've been all over, and there ain't a pot roast in Summerfield.
Well, that's a shame. Brink was particularly fond of pot roast, as I remember. He was the greatest man for meat and potatoes I ever knew.
Present company accepted.
Huh? Oh, yes. Well, what did you get, Bertie?
Well, they had some nice liver.
Oh, liver and bacon is good, with French fried onions.
Yeah, but you know how some people is about onions.
How's that?
They can't stand them, so I didn't get the liver.
Oh, well, perhaps it's just as well.
They had some leg of lamb instead.
Oh, lamb is good. You have plenty of other things with it. Mint sauce or currant jelly.
Yeah, but you're liable to run into lamb every day of the week, so I didn't get the lamb.
Well, what did you get?
Mr. Gilsleeve, you like guinea hen?
Guinea hen? Oh, now you're talking, Bertie, with nice stuffing and wild rice.
And maybe some cream mushrooms on the side?
Oh, wonderful. I love it.
Wish I'd known that, I'd have bought the guinea hen.
What? You didn't get it?
No, not knowing the gentleman you invited for dinner, I figured I'd better play safe.
Well, what did you get?
Well, I figured I better get something that didn't take too long to cook in case maybe he was a little late.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. What did you get?
You know, something I could put on the fire after he got here. Something people like.
Come clean, Bertie. What did you get?
I got pork chops.
Pork chops.
Oh, I better be getting this stuff out to the kitchen. Here comes Miss Margie up the wall.
Pork chops. Oh, well.
Oh!
Oh, look out there!
Leroy, you have to lie in front of the door.
Yes, young man. Pick that paper up.
Gosh, I can't tell even do a little reading around here.
The idea. Well, you're looking blooming, my dear.
Oh, it looks terrible now, but I think it'll be all right when it's combed out. I had him cut it off a little shorter.
It looks fine. I hope you didn't make any plans for this evening, my dear.
Well, you know I have. Why do you think I had my hair done?
I don't know why women have their hair done. It's just something that comes over them.
Uncle Mort, you knew I had a date.
Yes, but...
I stood dug up last Saturday because you asked me to, and I'm not going to do it again. What have you got against Doug?
Nothing at all, my dear. It's just that this son of an old college chum of mine turned up unexpectedly, so I asked him out to dinner.
Oh, fine, I'll be glad to have dinner with him, but after that, I'm sorry.
But you don't understand, my dear. This boy is all American.
What do you think Doug is? An Indian?
I mean, he's a football player.
No kidding, Unc. An All-American?
Well, his father was.
I don't care if his dad was president. I've got a date with Doug.
Marjorie.
Yes?
It's not very often I ask you to do a thing like this, but I'm asking you tonight. This means a lot to me. I'd like to show this boy a good time. And I'd like you to help me.
But Uncle Moore...
You like this boy, my dear? I haven't met him yet, but if he's anything like his dad, you'll be crazy about him. All the girls were crazy about Brink. He was a great big strapping fella, had a grip like a bear trap. Mm. He'd shake hands with you and your knees would turn to water.
He must have been a charmer.
Yes, Brinkerhoff was a hero to me. To me. He was a hero to everybody in school. I remember in my senior year, the biggest weekend of the year.
The day of the junior prom.
The day of the big game.
Well, you're both right. The weekend of the game with steak was also the weekend of the junior prom. And I'd invited a girl down for the occasion. A blind date.
Uh-oh.
You're wrong, Leroy. This girl turned out to be a pippin.
How did you recognize her when you met her, Uncle Mort?
It was all very romantic, my dear. She wrote me she'd wear a red hat with a green feather. And I wrote her I'd be wearing my raccoon coat, my beanie, and a chrysanthemum.
You must have been quite a boy owning a raccoon coat.
It belonged to my roommate. He was rich. But I'll never forget that day waiting down at the depot. There was a flock of us there. And as the train pulled in...
Oh! Oh! Where is she? Where is she? She'll probably get off at the other end. Oh, a red hat. And pardon me, miss.
Are you addressing me, sir?
My mistake. No green feather. Oh, there's a blue hat. And look what's under it. Ooh, I wish it was her. Oh, my goodness, maybe she didn't come. Oh, wait, there's a red hat with a green feather. What a chassis. Oh, miss, are you by any chance Miss Betty Beaumont?
Oh, yes, I am. Are you Mr. Throckmorton Gildersleeve?
That's me in person. Well, it's fine you got here. Did you have a pleasant trip?
Oh, it was catsy.
Here, let me get those grips and we'll go on up to the fraternity house.
That'll be Cassie.
Yeah. Oh, look, you see this fella coming?
Yeah.
That's Brinkerhoff, the captain of our team.
Really? My, but he's handsome. Do you know him?
Well, sort of. Hello, Mr. Brinkerhoff.
Hello there. Oh, I mean, hello there, Gildersleeve. Put her there.
Yeah.
Ouch!
My hand. Glad to see you, Brinkerhoff. Miss Beaumont, I have the honor to present Mr. Brinkerhoff, the captain of our 11.
How do you do?
Well, I'm mighty glad to know you, Miss Beaumont, I'm sure. Hey, can I give you folks a lift up to the campus in my car?
Well, I...
Oh, Mr. Brinkerhoff, that would be Cassie.
Just call me Brink, Miss Beaumont.
All right, Brink. Can we ride up with Brink, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Call me Tubby.
Could we, Tubby?
Sure, Tubby, come on. Hey, I tell you what, we can stop off the sweet shop and let Tubby buy us a soda. How about?
Gee, Brink, that would be catchy.
Hey, by the way, what are you and Betty doing tonight?
Tonight? Well, tonight I'm going to sing in the glee club tonight. Me, 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 me.
Tubby's quite a singer.
Yeah.
Say, Tubby, how about letting me bring Betty to the concert to hear you so she won't have to go alone? You know what I mean, Betty?
Uh-huh.
How about it, Tubby?
Gosh, Brink, thanks. What a pal. You think of everything.
Now, men, you're going out on that field for that second half against State. The only way you can lose this game is if you all fall asleep. So I want you to play like you're behind. And that means fight. F-I-G... T, fight.
Hey, Tubby.
Oh, hello, Brink. Gee, you're playing a great game, Brink.
Ah, that's nothing to what I'm going to do this half. Say, Tubby, how about bringing Betty over the Sig Sig dance tonight, huh?
Oh, gosh, Brink, I'd sure like to, but I can't make it.
Oh, you can't, huh?
No.
Well, that's too bad. I fixed it with Coach Mulligan for you to play a couple of minutes in this second half.
Oh, gee, no kidding.
Yeah, that'll get you your letter, you know. It'll make you look like a hero to Betty up there in the stands.
Oh, gosh, Brink, you sure are a pal.
Yeah. You sure you couldn't change your mind about tonight?
I'd like to, Brink. I'd sure like to bring Betty to that dance, but I promised my roommate we'd go with him and his cousin and spend the evening at his aunt's house.
Oh, well, that's too bad, Tubby. That's too bad.
Huh? All right, everybody, on the field.
Oh, thanks, Coach.
That's how I got my letter. If it hadn't been for Brink, the coach might have never put me in that game.
Yeah, but how did you do in the game, Unc? How did it come out?
Well, it was a funny thing about that. On the very first play, somebody clipped me from behind, knocked me down, and kicked me on the nose. They carried me off the field on a stretcher.
Gosh, were you hurt badly?
Broke my collarbone. I was laid up in the infirmary for 10 days. But do you know what Brink did?
What?
He took care of my girl for me all the rest of that weekend. Betty, she was a queen. That's the last date I ever had with her.
After that, she went with Brink.
Yeah, how did you know?
You sure he wasn't also the one who broke your collarbone?
Brink? Never. Brink was my pal.
Are you kidding?
Oh, that must be young Brink now. Gosh, I can't wait to see if he looks like his dad.
I'll go, my dear.
Ah, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes, come in. Come right in. By George, you're the spitting image of your dad. I'd know you any place. Yes, sir. Always glad to meet the son of Brink. Put her there, my boy. Glad to. Oh! My hand! Chip off the old block, all right.
Let's return to the great Gildersleeve, who has invited a few of his closest friends in for the evening to meet the son of his old college chum, Brink Brinkerhoff. Dinner is over, and our host beams with pride upon the little group of guests clustered about the young hero.
But did that stop me?
Not me. I double back, ran through the whole team, circled around right end for a good 30 yards, and would have made the touchdown if it hadn't been I ran into my own interference.
Well, a chip off the old block, all right, folks.
Mr. Brinkerhoff, I think that's the most exciting story I ever heard. Tell us some more of your experiences.
Speaking of college puts me in mind of a rather amusing little experience of my own youth.
Oh, brother.
The time we stole the clapper out of the chapel bell. You know the old saying, boys will be boys.
Oh.
Well, sir, for some reason...
Hey, Margie, come on in the den here.
What is it you want?
Who's that old geezer out there shooting off his face?
That's Judge Hooker. He's a friend of my uncle's.
Well, is he going to talk all night? Why don't he give somebody else a chance?
He's a very nice man.
Well, he talks too much. Hey, what do you say we get out of this fire trap and shake these stale characters?
These are my friends.
Oh, come on. Come on. Let's get out of here.
I don't see how you can say that. After all, Uncle Mort invited all these people just here to meet you.
Well, they've met me. They've had their thrill. We don't have to stay here all night while that lame brain swipes the clapper out of the bell, do we? Well, that's good for 3 hours.
Well...
Come on, you and I could make beautiful music together, honey. They'll never miss us.
Well, Uncle Mark did say he wanted you to have a good time.
You see, that settles it. Uncle's orders. My car is right outside.
Frightfully late. Good night, Throckmorton.
Good night, Mrs. Ransom.
Good night, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Good night, Peavy.
Well, Gildy, what do you suppose became of our young friends?
They'll turn up, Horace. Don't be so nosy.
That young Brinkerhoff seems to be quite a fella.
Yes, well, he takes after his dad. Brink always did have a way with the girls.
Yeah, it's youth, I guess. Youth. Reminds me of the time I swiped the clapper out of the chapel bell. But I guess I told you about that.
More than once. Good night, Horace.
Good night, Gildy.
The old goat. You'd think he was the only man that ever stole a clapper out of a bell. Oh, 2 o'clock in the morning. Why, George, this is going too far. I'll tell that Brink. Look here, Brinkerhoff, I'll say to him. Friendship is friendship, I'll say to him. But enough's enough. We have a rule in this house, I'll say to him. When my niece goes out in the evening, I want to know where she's going, I'll say to him. And furthermore... Oh, I guess they're back.
And about time, too.
Well, thank you, Brink. I've had a perfectly wonderful time.
Brink?
Hey, what's your hurry? The evening's young yet. I'll come in. We can scramble some eggs. Or something.
No, I'd love to, but I can't, really. I've got to get up early tomorrow.
What for? What do you got to get up for that's better than this? Answer me that.
Oh, brother, chip off the old block, all right.
Please, I've got to go, really. Please.
No, I don't take my foot out of the door till you give me a kiss.
Oh, are you going to start that again?
We'll see about that. Marjorie!
There, I told you. Coming, Uncle Mort. Good night. Sorry I'm so late, Uncle Mort, but there wasn't a thing I could do about it.
Marjorie, where have you been?
This wasn't my idea, remember? You said give him a good time.
Uncle Mort, there's a man following me.
Mr. Gildersleeve, I want to complain about your niece. She doesn't treat me right.
Uncle Mort, if you don't mind, I think I'll run up now. I'm tired, and I think I'll just say good night.
Good night, my dear.
Good night, sugar.
Good night.
It's a great little girl you got there, Mr. Gildersleeve. She's a dilly.
Yeah, she's a fine girl. A little difficult at times, though.
Well, that's women, you know. You can't get along with them, and you can't get along without them.
Very good.
Hey, speaking of Marjorie, I wonder if you're going to be busy tomorrow, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Marjorie, busy?
Yeah. I wonder if I could drop into your office to speak to you for a few moments.
If you mean about Marjorie?
Yeah. Yeah, about Marjorie.
Well, certainly. Always glad to see you anytime, my boy.
Shall we make it around 11?
11. Suits me.
Fine. Good night, Mr. Gildersleeve. It's been swell.
Good night, my boy. Oh, ow, my hand. Good night. Great kid. Marjorie. Oh, Marjorie.
What is it, Uncle Mort?
I know a secret and I won't tell.
What do you mean?
I know.
I don't know what you're talking about, Uncle Mort. And I'm tired.
You can't fool your old uncle, but I won't tell.
I don't know what you're talking about. Good night.
Good night, my dear. Pleasant dreams.
Leela!
Oh, hello, Throckmorton.
Hello, Leela.
I had a most enjoyable evening at your house last night.
I want to tell you about last night. You know, Marjorie and young Brinkerhoff disappeared early in the evening. You noticed that?
Well, I didn't like to say anything.
Yes. Well, guess what? He's coming down to my office this morning to talk to me.
You mean about?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think that's so romantic.
Yes, so do I.
Why, who'd ever think little Marjorie? Why, she never even met him till yesterday, did she?
That's right. Last night.
Mm.
Of course, it's all up to Marjorie. I don't want to influence her, but his dad was one of my best friends at college.
Oh, I think it's just wonderful. You know, I always longed for somebody to sweep me off my feet like that, but my husband Beauregard was such a cautious man.
Yeah.
He was a lawyer, you know. He courted me for 3 years till finally Father had to speak to him.
Well, they don't lose any time these days, by George.
Yes, it happens so fast nowadays, you never know who'll be next, do you?
Next. I gotta be getting along. See you at the church, Lisa.
Gildersleeve?
Oh, hello, Peavy. Well, it looks as if I might be losing my little girl, Peavy.
You mean Marjorie?
Yeah, she and young Brinkerhoff slipped out early in the evening last night, if you noticed.
Yes, I thought there was something funny going on there.
Well, he's coming down to the office to talk to me about it at 11 o'clock.
Is that so?
Yeah.
I suppose congratulations are in order, then.
Thank you. I'm going to hate to lose her, though, Peavy.
Well, marriage is a great institution. I've had a good many years' experience with it. So has Mrs. Peavy. And I think we'd agree that your niece is making no mistake.
You know, Peavy, I've always regretted that I didn't marry.
Have you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes, I've always felt somehow that I was missing one of the finest things in life.
Well, I wouldn't say that. Marriage has its conveniences and its inconveniences.
Oh, well, of course, it's like anything else. It's a matter of give and take.
More give than take. I think Mrs. Peavy would go along with me on that, too.
I know, but you've been married a long time, Peavy.
23 years, so has Mrs. Peavy.
Is... When you've been married as long as that, I suppose the novelty sort of wears off.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that either. Mrs. Peavy still manages to spring a little surprise on me now and then. Only the other day, she presented me with a watch fob she crocheted for me. Last thing in the world you'd expect.
Watch fob, crocheted. I take it all back, Peavy. I'm glad I never got married. Oh, I gotta be getting there. Can't keep him waiting.
Then goodbye, Mr. Gilbert.
Wait a minute. What did I come in here for?
Razor blade?
No.
Scam?
No. Well, it'll come back to me. Goodbye, Peavy.
And goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Is he here yet, Miss Fitch?
Is who here yet?
The kid, young Brink.
No one's been here. Were you expecting someone?
Was I expecting someone? Yeah. Oh, but you don't know.
Know what?
That young fellow who was in here yesterday. You know, the one I said I couldn't see.
Yes.
Little did I know. Miss Fitch, I think, I'm not sure, but I think he may going to be marrying my niece.
No.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he was rather good looking.
Looks just like his dad, a chip off the old block.
Little Margie, a wedding. Won't that be exciting? You know, I love weddings.
Yeah?
And funerals.
This may be him now.
Well, good morning, Governor.
Well, come in, my boy. Come in.
Nice of you to give me a little of your time.
Not at all. I won't shake hands. Always glad to oblige the son of an old college chum. Step right into my private office here.
Thanks.
Miss Fitch, will you please see that we're not disturbed?
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Sit down, my boy. She's all right. Take the chair there. Have a cigar.
Oh, thanks. Don't care if I do.
I always like a man that smokes cigars. There's a lighter on the desk there. Well, I guess if Marjorie knew that you were down here talking to me, she'd be kind of surprised, wouldn't she?
You think a lot of that niece of yours, don't you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Oh, I think the world of her. She's a fine girl, Marjorie. I don't know a finer one.
I agree with you.
She's been a good niece to me, and she'll make a darn good wife to somebody.
I'm with you 100%. Say, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes?
Have you ever considered what would become of Marjorie in the event that you were to pass on?
Huh?
Now, I have an insurance policy here that'll...
Oh! You're just like your old man. You get out of here. You know, here in Summerfield, we've sort of prided ourselves on doing the best we could every time a scrap drive or a bond drive came along, or anything that would help the war effort. But tonight, our hats are off to three other towns: Green Bay, Wisconsin, Freeport, Illinois, and Decatur, Indiana. In each of these towns, the Kraft Cheese Company has a plant, and those three plants have just been given the Army Navy E Award for outstanding service in the production of food for our fighting men. Many manufacturers have been given this award, but this is the first time it has ever been presented to the men and women who help to make our Army and Navy the best fed in the world. We in Summerfield can't claim any credit for that accomplishment, but we can take pride in it, and we do. To you, men and women of the Kraft Company in Green Bay, Freeport, and Decatur, our hearty congratulations. Good night, everybody.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Ken Carpenter speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
From November of 1952, it's been the Great Gildersleeve with college chum Sun Visits. In a moment, great police drama with Calling All Cars and the York Gang Holdup, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Calling All Cars is a classic among police dramas and one of the earliest of the genres. The program began on CBS on the West Coast, sponsored by Rio Grande Oil Company, in November of 1933 and continued until September of 1939. Believed to be a precursor of the popular police drama Dragnet, Calling All Cars portrayed true crime stories of the Los Angeles Police Department. The show did not follow the work of police officers per se, but rather concentrated on the crime itself and the solution methods employed. Today we'll hear one of the earliest programs of Calling All Cars available. As such, some of the references will seem dated, but we leave them in their entirety in order to preserve the historical value of this program. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Calling All Cars and the York Gang Holdup from December of 1933. Another classic program from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Please calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 3. You're on the lookout for LaSalle Coupe. 8X-ray 3072. 3 men in the car. An American, a Mexican, and a Negro. He's been wanted for robbery and murder. That's all. Rosenberg.
Will you help the police in their war against juvenile delinquency? Every boy and girl should be trained to respect the law and despise lawbreakers. Already, many thousands of young boys and girls have joined Rio Grande's Junior Police Department. We offer 15 different free gifts to members, complete G-Man and Junior Detective outfits. Your neighborhood dealer who sells Rio Grande cracked gasoline will show you how to get all 15 of these gifts, all free. If you are interested in police and crime stories, you should read the Calling All Cars News, an interesting, illustrated monthly publication given away wherever Rio Grande cracked gasoline is sold. We are pleased to present Captain Burt Wallace, head of the homicide squad of the Los Angeles Police Department. Captain Wallace.
Good evening, friends. We hear much about the reformation of the hardened criminal. It rarely happens that way. Once the criminal has stepped across the borderline into dishonesty, it seems that he can't resist the temptation to turn another trick. It is very discouraging to police officers to spend so much time and so much of the taxpayers' money to capture a bandit and then have him turned loose by the parole system after a short jail sentence. Police know only too well that they will soon pick up evidence that the so-called reform criminal has returned to his erring ways. Police records are full of cases of men and women arrested again and again and again. Police know that most major crimes are committed by experienced criminals who have police records. Tonight's broadcast tells the story of a gang of hold-up men composed, with one exception, of ex-convicts. It gives a typical example of how these men, whose minds have already been poisoned against law and order, delight in pitting their strength against the law enforcement agencies. Their punishment by the courts does not teach them a lesson. As you will see, it is necessary for your police department to keep a watch on all known criminals and paroled convicts. And it is from their ranks that the police make most of their arrests. I hope that the moral taught by tonight's program will be instrumental in keeping many potential law violators from making that dangerous first step. I very much fear that, once having tasted the forbidden fruits of crime, it is almost impossible to return to a respectable life, and that the police must arrest the criminally inclined again and again, if necessary, until they have been put behind the bars for good. Our story opens on a warm summer afternoon in 1932, in a little jewelry store on South Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles. The proprietor, black magnifying glass in his eye, is repairing a watch when a customer wanders in, followed by two companions, one a Negro.
Yeah, well, good afternoon. And what can I do for you?
I want to look at your watches.
Yeah. About what price watch you have in mind?
Oh, something around $35.
$35. Yeah, Well, yes, we have some very nice numbers at that price. Just a minute, and I will show you. Here. Now, here's a very smart watch. Swiss movement. Guaranteed.
Here? Hold up your hands.
What?
Hold up your hands.
My God, my sister's here.
Now, shut up. Dump those watches into the bag, Frank. Take this bird into the back room, Hank.
Okay, boss.
Look, Bob, here is a bag of jewels, diamonds, rubies.
Okay, dump it in and don't talk so much. We gotta make time. But don't miss that silverware back there.
No, I get
him. Hey, boss, did you get those open back here?
Well, lock it, dummy.
Yow. Look up. Here comes somebody.
All right, pile that junk into the sack. I'll take care of him. What do you want?
I'm looking for the manager. You the manager?
No, I'm not.
Oh, I see. Well, I'd like to get my wife's watch fixed. It seems the mainspring is...
Get in the back room.
Yes, Paul will be here soon.
I said get in the back room.
But set your hand. Well, I declare, a gun.
I'll give you three to get in the back room.
Well, the police will hear of this.
One.
And it'll go hard with you.
Two.
I never was one to stand by and see the law.
Three.
What's going on in here, boss?
Never mind now, Hank. You got the junk, Frank?
See, the sack is full.
How about you, Hank?
I ain't had time yet, boss.
All right, forget it. Get going. This will be a tough beef. We'd better scram quick.
Oh, my God, they've killed him. Help! Police!
A few moments later, the police arrive. The clues are meager. The frightened jeweler's description of the bandit, the bullet which is later removed from the skull of the murdered customer, and a pillowcase which one of the bandits had dropped in his flight. This pillowcase, which was used as a sack for the loot, is turned over to Ray Pinker of the police department's laboratory. Later in the day, he makes his report to Inspector Davidson of the homicide detail.
Well, Ray, what did you find?
I was able to make out this erased laundry mark. It's 1471.
1471. Just a minute till I make a note of that.
Well, there seems to have been a name worked into this material in the thread. Probably the name of a hotel. I've carefully pulled all the threads out, and I haven't been able to decipher that yet.
Very well. Keep after it.
You bet I will.
But the clue of the pillowcase leads nowhere. For the search of the hotel whose property it is results in no suspects fitting the description of the bandits. It looks like a clean getaway. That night, York returns to the gang's hideout from the fence.
Who is that?
I'll guess that's the boss.
And maybe the bulls.
You answer him, Hank.
And get all shot up? No, sir. Not me. No, sir.
Ah, it's Bob. Three rings. I will get it.
Well, boss, how you make out?
Not bad, not good.
How much is that?
Well, he gave me $500 for the stuff.
Only five thieves?
You should have let me take it to the fence, I know, Bob. I could get lots more.
That's the best I could do.
How much are you holding out for yourself?
I cut that talk, Mug. I don't do business that way.
Okay. Drop the gat.
All right, boys. This will not get us no place. Let us have the dough.
Okay. Here you are. I figure the cut this way. 150 for Frank and me, and 100 apiece for Hank and Tiny.
Hey, what is
No, just a minute there, boy.
Now, listen. Frank and I really pulled the job. Hank mussed around in the back room all the time. I don't know what he was doing, playing kiss the pillow with a Dutch jeweler or something.
Now, listen here, boss. I can explain all that, I'll tell you.
Tiny only drove the car. Frank and I did the real work.
Yeah, and you pulled a beef bumping off that old man.
Yeah, you didn't have to do that, boss.
How'd I know the guy was deaf? I can't stop to ask questions during a job.
Listen here, York. You pulled a beef. But if the bulls get us, we'll all take the rap for it. Oh, maybe only life for us while you swing. We're all in it. We're cutting even, see?
Yes, Bob. Me, I do not want more than the rest.
And if you don't cut even, York, I'd just soon turn the heat on you as look at you.
Well, I don't want no trouble.
You bet you don't. You don't want me to press the button on this tie I got here, do you, York? Now, how do we cut?
Okay. It's an even split.
That's more like it.
Here you are. 100 and a quarter apiece.
In marked money, York?
Oh, shut up. Where's Rosita, Frank?
Oh, my little niece. I do not know. Back in the kitchen, maybe.
Well, I'm going out and talk to her. Rosita?
Yes?
Where are you?
Here in the kitchen.
Hello, Chiquita.
Yorkie. Hello, querido.
I got something for you, honey.
For Rosita? What is it?
Here.
Oh, Yorkie. How beautiful. A real diamond. It is real, no?
Well, if it ain't, I did a lot of work this afternoon for nothing.
Oh, it is beautiful. Oh, Rosita love you so very much for it. Rosita, she give you big kiss for him.
I like that.
Rosita, she knows how to kiss, eh?
I'll say. Oh, look, here's something else for you.
Something else?
Yeah, here's $50. Go and get yourself some glad rags.
Oh, Yorkie, you are so nice to me. I give you another kiss.
Say, Rosita, how'd you like to marry me?
Marry you? In Mrs. Yorkie? No, really?
Yeah, on the up and up. Have a padre hook us and everything.
Me, I think that would be one swell good idea.
You do? Mm-hmm. Gee, that's great. No, no, wait a minute. Listen, I'm liable to be in trouble. You know that.
Trouble? Tell me, he said something had gone wrong today. What is it?
Well, truth is, I killed a guy.
Well?
Well, don't that make no difference?
Why should it? We can go to Mexico. We can run away. I will take you to the little town where I was born. They will never find you there.
Yeah, but we ain't got no dough.
Get some. Go get some like you got these. Only get a lot. Rob a bank.
Rob a bank? That's an idea. A good idea. I'll talk to the boys about it right now.
Yorkie.
Yeah?
You forgot to kiss Rosita.
Oh, yeah. Chiquita, here are the berries. Hey, boys.
Yeah?
I got a great idea.
Like bumping off an old man?
Oh, shut up. Now, listen, Rogers. I'm sick of the sight of you. Now, get out.
What do you mean, get out?
You pulled your last job with me, and I'm through with you.
Now, look here. What
you heard me. You got your cut. More than you deserve. You paid off a scram.
Well, if that's the way you feel about
it. Well, it is the way I feel about it. You're nothing but a small change, Rogers. Well, I've been sprung out of more big houses than you ever heard of.
Yeah, well, listen. I done my time, too.
Now, you'd never know it. You talk like a kid sticking up gas stations. Now, beat it. I got no time for you.
Okay. But maybe I'm making a mistake.
Yeah, and maybe I'm just wising up. And don't slam the door when you go out. That guy gets on my nerves.
Oh, good. He's a good man, boss.
Well, I don't want him around me. You get it?
Yes, yes. I sure do. Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's the idea. We're going to stick up a bank.
A bank? That's a big job, boss.
You're telling me? Well, we're doing only big jobs from now on. Now, look here. We're in up to our necks now. If they ever get us, we're on our way to the big house. But if we pull a couple of nice jobs, we can all get out of the country with enough to live on for the rest of our lives.
You're figuring on getting some real important money, is that it, boss?
Right. Now, we'll need another guy. A good, hard guy to pull a bank job. Now, can you think of anybody? Say, I've got it. Turpin. You know him?
Don't seem to if I does, no.
See, I know him. He is all right. He is very good with the guard.
All right. We'll start on one of these little branch banks out this way. And then, just to be sure we get enough for the rest of our lives, we'll knock over one of the big downtown banks. Listen, we got everything to gain. And if we stick around here too long, the bulls are bound to pick us up. Then the cards. The homicide squad down at the city hall is a tough bunch of monkeys. And don't ever forget it.
Gang works slowly, cautiously, planning their crime. They do not strike until a month later, and then, late in the morning of August 23rd, 1932, as the manager of a branch bank on South Broadway answers the telephone.
Oh, hello, Dave. How are you? Yes, indeed. Oh, that'll be all right. Yeah. Yes, we can handle you for that amount. Yeah. Hey, Dave, don't hang up. Three tough fellows just walked in. One of them's a Negro. Yeah. Yes, Dave, it's a holdup. They just pulled their guns. Call the police right away. I got to hang up.
Hey, you over there.
Who, me?
Yeah. You move to the back. Now get going. Keep him covered, Hank. While I get the dough.
All right, boss.
All right. Pass it out, Frank.
Please.
Hank,
sir.
I told you, watch that guy's got to go.
Oh, he got me. He got me, boss. He got me.
Stop that car. The money?
I don't have it, Rosita. Frank's got it.
Well, will you?
He's shot.
Shot?
Yeah. They plugged him.
Will, what happened?
Oh, the boy's got buck fever. It didn't turn out like we figured. Everything went wrong.
Well, where is Gil Francisco?
We left him on the street.
You left my uncle on the street to die?
Oh, listen, baby. We couldn't help it.
There wasn't time to get him. That manager was blazing away at us.
You left my uncle to die.
Oh, honey. He ain't bumped off. Hank is. He's dead. But Frank's okay. He's just wounded out there.
You left him to die. You're a thief. He was the only one in the world who was good to me.
Oh, now listen, Rosetta. Listen to me. I swear I'll spring him from the hospital. I'll spring him if I have to bump off a half a dozen guys to do it.
No, he's dead. I know it. You let him die. I never want to see you again. Get out! Get out! Get out!
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello, Metro. What's the trouble?
The 10th Bank holdup.
He's the bandit?
Two of them.
Ed?
Yes, four of them.
Okay. Keep that card back, will you?
Yes, sir.
Here's the manager of the bank, Romero. He shot these two guys.
I see. How many others were there?
Well, there was one more in the bank at the time. He seemed to be the leader. And then there were two more in the car. I shot at the car as it drove away. Maybe I hit one of them. I don't know.
What kind of a car was it?
It was a LaSalle coupe.
Did you get the license number?
No, I couldn't get it.
Officer. Yes? Oh, officer, I've got the license number of that car.
You have?
Yes. I was just coming into the bank, but I heard the shooting. I hid in the doorway and watched them drive away. I wrote down the license. Here it is. 8X3072.
Well, that's fine. Thank you very much. Very much obliged, lady. Oh, Burris.
Yes?
Call headquarters and get this on the broadcast and teletype. Bandits escaped in a LaSalle coupe. License number 8X3072.
Right. And say, here's some addresses and telephone numbers from the Mexican's body.
Good. These ought to lead us someplace.
Say, Romero, I just found this in the teller's cage.
A pillowcase, huh?
Yep, and the same kind as we found in that jewelry store murder on Vermont last month.
Say, it is at that. Now we're getting someplace.
The pillowcase turns out to be a mate to the one used in the jewelry store holdup. And the addresses found in Alvarado's pocket lead the officers to the gang's hideout on Mercury Street. Under the direction of Inspector Davidson of the homicide detail, a stakeout of the place reveals only a young girl as the occupant of the house. Late in the day, the officer decides to pay her a call.
Yes?
We're police officers, ma'am.
Matthew Francisco, how is he?
Who?
Uncle Frank. He is all right?
It must mean Frank Alvarado.
Frank? What's his last name?
Alvarado.
Frank Alvarado, huh?
Si. Is he all right?
He's dead, ma'am.
Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, pobre tio Francisco. Pobre tio Francisco. That pig. Leaving him on the street to die.
What's that?
That Yorkie. He let my uncle die.
Yorkie? Who's he?
You want to know, eh?
Yeah.
You want to know everything so you can catch him, eh? Well, I will tell you everything. He left my uncle to die, so you shall know everything. Come in. I will help you find that pig.
Rosita's information leads the officers to a rooming house on Maple Street operated by an Oriental where York and Alvarado stayed on August 15th.
Oh, hello. How do you do? What can I do for very nice American gentleman?
Let's see your register.
Oh, what for I show register?
Don't ask so many questions. We're from police headquarters.
Oh, yes, very fine policeman. I show. Here, you please look.
Yeah, let's see now. 19th, 18th, 16th. Here we are.
Just two names. Thomas Kern and William Cummings. Probably phony.
Yeah.
Hey, you. Know anything about these two fellas?
Oh, what a fellow. Oh, these are. Oh, what do you want to know?
What do they look like?
Oh, look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, I scared. I not remember. That many day ago. I forget. Many people come. Many people go. I not notice.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Please?
Try to think what these two men look like, will you? It wasn't so long ago. Only a week.
Oh, no. I'm sure I cannot think. I no remember.
Well, then, that's that.
Maybe he doesn't remember.
Yeah, maybe.
Rosetta's
Lolita willingly accompanies the officers as they search all night through the hills in the vicinity of the hideout for the fugitive. Then she suggests that they may be at a coffee house she knows of on South Main Street. Early in the morning, they visit this place, and Burris goes in, but soon returns to the car.
What luck?
None.
No, they're not there. Nobody's seen anyone like them for days.
Maybe. Hey, I got a hunch.
Oh, what?
Let's go back to that dump on Maple Street.
What dump?
The one Burris and I looked over yesterday.
Well, it's worth a try.
See, it is a good idea. They will be there, maybe. Then the pig will pay.
For you wake me up before honorable sun in sky?
I want to look at that register again.
Oh, very good. I sure.
Anybody else come in since we were here before?
Oh, people come, they go. Yes, I think very fine people he come. You please to look?
Hmm. Look, Romero.
Huh?
Here's the same birds registered yesterday as registered on the 16th.
Yeah, let me see. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, let me see that handwriting. Well, say, that checks with this, you see?
Now, what's that?
York's writing from the police records.
Well, then I think we've got the boys.
Hey, you. What room are they in?
What a room? Oh, I think number 16, I think.
Are they there now?
I know nothing.
Did you tell them we've been here before?
Oh, I run extra special fine rooming house. I know nothing else.
Okay, you got a key to 16?
I think maybe I find him here on the desk.
All right, find it. Let us into that room.
Oh, I wonder if this is a good thing for a customer.
Don't forget, we're police officers.
Oh, yes, sir. I remember now. I open that. You come around to this way, please.
Heavy guns ready, boys. These are tough monkeys.
All
okay.
Right.
Well, here we are. All set?
You ready.
Okay. Open her up.
All right, I do. Oh, I know what I'm do. Bolt on the other side. He's locked.
Ah, they got it bolted from the inside, eh?
Who's there?
Open the door.
Who is it?
Open up.
All right, I'll break the door down.
All set, boys.
Okay.
On your toes now.
Hey, what's the big?
Yeah, we're police officers. Take him up. Take him up. You two over there.
Okay.
What's that guy on the bed? He's got a gun.
Drop it. Look out, Andy. He's going to shoot. Let him have it.
Now drop it.
Okay. Did
you
hit the bat?
Pretty bad.
Where? Down here. Sorry, but you shouldn't have whipped that rod out from under the covers.
I know. I asked for it. Snap the braces on the boys. Hey, Burris, you call the ambulance and take Turcotte to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, will you?
Okay.
Andy and I'll take Mr. York here to Central.
It's okay with me, boys. I can take it.
It ought to be okay.
Okay.
All right. Come on, let's go.
Listen, keep a stiff upper lip, Turk. And don't say nothing.
Right. So long, pal.
Robert York confessed to the murder of William Kirkpatrick in the jewelry store holdup and implicated his previous accomplice, Rogers, in the crime. LeMay, the driver in the bank robbery, was sent to San Quentin for 7 years to life. Turcotte, permanently wounded, and Rogers were given life sentences on a verdict of first-degree robbery and murder, and Robert York was hanged. So these habitual criminals again learned that you cannot beat the law. This time, the evidence presented by the police was so damning that the courts meted out stiff sentences. I hope that a mistaken sense of mercy will not result in these confirmed criminals being released from their life sentence to prey again on respectable citizens.
Thank you, Captain Wallace.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars, attention all cars. Cancellation of broadcast screen. Regarding three men wanted for murder and robbery. These men are now in custody. That's all. Roll over.
From December 13th of 1933, it's been Calling All Cars with the York Gang Holdup. Well, that's all the time we have on today's program, but make it a point to join us again next week and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.